Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry M., and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, September 22nd, 2022, and today we are reading from the Big Book. We are starting the chapter More About Alcoholism, and we are on page 30. Reading the first paragraph only. And today's readers are Adrian M., Jody E., and Freya H. The reference number for Wednesday, September 21st, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 19,432. And the share ID for Thursday, 7 a.m. meeting on September 22nd is 19,438. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Deb E. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Deb E. in Montana, and these are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I will pass.
Thanks, Deb E., and I will ask Wendy G. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Wendy G. in Colorado, and these are the 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service.
Thanks, Wendy. Okay, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order for us to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 30, paragraph 1, and I will ask Adrian M. to begin reading for us. Thanks, Adrian.
Good morning, Nate. Everyone, this is Adrian M. from Florida. We're starting chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. Well, what I have found is I have tried so many times to do market research, going out time and time again and realizing that I was powerless over the food, that no person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different. Well, the doctor's opinion explains it to me and explains that I need total abstinence and a spiritual awakening. And that someday, somehow, I will control and enjoy my drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal thinker. An obsession is an idea or thought that continually preoccupies or intrudes on a person's mind. And I get obsessions not about the food, but of life, of things going on. And I have to pause, pray, and use spiritual energy. Ask God to remove the obsession, to do a turnaround, to ask, is this obsession true? To do outreach calls, to reach out to my sponsor. And that the persistence of this illusion that I could eat like a normal eater is astonishing, and the illusion is a thing that is or is likely to be wrongly perceived or interpreted by the senses. And I had that problem today in my thinking. The stories I tell myself about life, about what people are saying, not to take it personally. They're just doing it. They're not doing it to me. I have so many illusions. Again, making the outreach calls. Look at what I'm trying to do to manage and control life. Because I want people and things to be a certain way so I feel comfortable. All these things used to take me to the food. Now I get to use the steps and the spiritual awakening and being abstinent to live and have the message, the relief, the recovery today. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adrian, for getting us started today. And before I take a lineup of people who would like to share on this paragraph that we just read, I would like to remind everyone that we do value your experience, but we do ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if you have shared on Tuesday or Wednesday on any Vision for You meeting, please hold back until tomorrow. I'm ready if you could give me your name one at a time, please. Thank you.
Wendy.
Larry G.
10WH.
April B.
Freya H.
Deborah G.
Okay, let me tell everyone who I have, and then I think I missed one or two. I have Wendy B., Larry G., Ken W. H., April, Freya H., Deborah G. Did I miss somebody? Okay, well then, let's start with this lineup. Go ahead, Wendy B.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And the line where it says unwilling to admit. And so that's called denial, you know, which means willful resistance to accept what is true. And I lived most of my life, you know, in that state, you know, before recovery. I deliberately chose to believe the lies. You know, I wanted to believe I could eat whatever I wanted and not suffer the consequences, you know, that there was a magic formula. And, you know, I just hadn't found it yet, you know, and I was in denial of the laws of nature, you know, that you reap what you sow, that if you eat more calories than you burn, you will gain weight, you know, and the idea that I could purge after binging was, you know, attractive, you know, because then I could avoid the consequences. And, you know, I was all about shirking responsibility and blaming others and avoiding consequences. You know, and I lived in that obsession to find the magic answer for a long time, you know, trying different diets, you know, different ways of combining foods, you know, trying healthier versions, thinking raw foods was the answer. You know, I could eat as much as I wanted if it wasn't a dead food or if it was a whole food, not processed, or, you know, if I took certain supplements, you know, blah, 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 you know, and it was all an attempt to deny the truth, you know, that if you eat more than your body burns, you'll gain weight, you know, and I was trying to beat the game, you know, like it says in There Is a Solution. And I'm just so grateful, you know, I got to the end of my pursuit, you know, and became willing to embrace the truth. You know, the big book is so clear, you know, so eye-opening that I can't go back into denial even if I wanted to. You know, I've heard and embraced the truth now, you know, and it's changed my life. You know, I've learned to accept responsibility for what I put into my mouth and what comes out of my mouth. You know, I'm facing the truth is possible because I have a loving God, you know, shining his light and supporting me through it, you know, helping me to stand up under the weight of it, you know, and, you know, he's taking my blinders off. When I'm ready to see the truth of situations, you know, he doesn't force me to stand naked and exposed all at once. You know, he just nudges me gently bit by bit, you know, knowing what I can handle and when. And thank you for letting me share.
Oh, thanks so much, Wendy B. All right, Larry G is up next.
Thank you. My name is Larry G. I'm from California. Wow, you know, we get through the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there's a solution, and Bill takes the gloves off at this paragraph. Unwilling to admit bodily and mentally different. Countless vain attempts to prove I can drink like other people. The idea somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating, which is a great obsession. And then the last pair of the sentence here, the persistence of the delusion is astonishing. This is what I didn't want to admit for 20 years and over Years Anonymous. And I don't want to minimize or disrespect OA. I showed up the last 20 years before I got to a vision for you, believing that this is what absent looked like for me. That if I could control my eating and have one good binge a week and get right back in the program, that was absence. And I had people around me who supported me in that. I said, oh, Larry, that binge you had on Friday night, just get back in. Let's have a fresh start. It's just a slip, right? And the game changer for me, and I hope the game changer for those of you who are coming to vision for the first time or out of relapse and want what we have, the game changer for me has been applying the hardcore principles of Alcoholics Anonymous to my over-year anonymous recovery program, which means this, that there's no slips. There's no slips. If I put a brownie, just a brownie, I take a little piece of that brownie, put in my mouth, that is a relapse because I am abstaining from sugar and flour. I pursued this to the gates of insanity. I controlled that for 20 years, thinking that if I could just maintain what I thought was absence, Monday through Thursday, and then get right back in the game on Saturday and Sunday, that I was absent. And I have to tell you, that idea was smashed on May 18th, 2020, when I came to a vision for you after having five dinners, 112 degrees here in Sacramento, on the couch in excruciating pain. I finally got on my knees. Isn't that just remarkable, Larry, you know, that you invited God in your life? Aren't you the swell guy? Well, no, I got on my knees because I had a blowtorch up my ass and I was done. I realized that I could no longer control my eating and I had to surrender. And surrender is the most important principle before we can even get started. I don't care how many means you go to Larry, sponsor, no sponsor, steps, no steps. Until I surrendered, nothing happened. And I had to detox off food for 60 days in excruciating pain to get where I am today. I passed. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry G. Next up is Ken W.H., and then we'll have April. Go ahead, Ken.
Thank you so much. This is Ken W.H., recovered compulsive overeater from Cary, North Carolina. Glad to be here today and starting this chapter about alcoholism. Real compulsive overeater. I spent too many years to mention 35 not being a real compulsive overeater in reality. I was, and I am still a compulsive overeater, but I would not admit that real, so to speak, the one that's an all-in kind of a thing. For years, I made up my own food, my own abstinence criteria, and for many years in OA, I would even say in meetings that I was a sugar-eating compulsive overeater. The sugar was a part of my diet, and it was okay because I was abstaining from certain behaviors or whatever, other foods perhaps. But I was convinced I could still eat sugar until about 2.5 years ago that I hit the wall with that and finally got honest enough to be able to say that I am a real compulsive overeater and that sugar was just teasing me for all of those years that I went to OA. I was not recovered, and I wasn't at times even recovering. I was just simply going through the motions. I don't recommend that to anyone in particular. Today, because of getting into the vision meeting, but especially getting into the doctor's opinion like never before, and finally coming to terms with my own allergy, my own obsession of the mind, and that I am indeed admitting to the bottom of my toes that I am a real compulsive overeater, and that entire abstinence is critical to me to remain that way for the rest of my life. I hope to do so one day at a time. Thanks for y'all being there, and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Ken. Next up is April, and then we'll have Freya. Go ahead, April.
Hi, this is April B. calling from Virginia. No person likes to think that he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Yeah, it didn't even cross my mind. I thought that everyone wanted to eat the whole bag once they had one. I thought everyone wanted the whole thing if they had a slice. I am so addicted to sugar and wheat that, you know, one piece sliver of something is enough to set me off and just, you know, be off to the races. But the fact is, I am bodily and mentally different from non-compulsive overeaters. Like, those people don't spend, you know, hours a day thinking about how they're going to get to the fix. They don't plan out elaborate, complicated ways of getting the fix and not having anybody know about it. You know, when it comes to the eating, for me, it is just like a drug and a fix, those certain things. And the idea that somehow, someday, they'll control and enjoy their eating, well, you know, for me, I've never been able to control my eating for very long. I was never a good dieter. Before I came into this program, I experienced no sense of control whatsoever. I was enjoying the food, but after having, multiple relapses in this program, not only is there no control, there's also no enjoyment of the eating either. It's just completely filled with, you know, self-hatred and loathing and guilt and shame and all these, you know, all these terrible negative emotions and feelings. But I never did have the control. And, you know, and yet there was the persistence of the illusion. There was the idea that, you know, this diet, I'll try this one, even though every single one before it has failed. Let's try this. I see this thing on a magazine in the grocery store. Okay, let's give it a shot. You know, burn 25 pounds in 2 weeks, you know, in 2 weeks. Sure, it's got to be possible. No way, not for me anyway. And yet I tried and tried and tried and tried. And I'm done trying those things. I don't even look at that. I see that stuff in the store. I look at it, I read it, and I laugh and go, that's lovely. And just think, no, I think I'll just stick with the programs. That's okay. That illusion had to be smashed for me. And I like, and I think now that it is, I don't look on any other thing as a magic pill outside of the program. I'm aware that I need the spiritual awakening and the surrender. And that's the only thing I'm looking for these days. And I'll pass.
Oh, perfect timing. Thank you, April. Nice to hear from you. Next up is Freya and then Deborah, and then I'll take a new lineup. Go ahead, Freya.
This is Freya H., recovered compulsive eater, bulimic restrictor in Colorado. Thanks so much. This chapter was the first place that I really identified in with this book because it was speaking my language, and I hadn't heard people talking about the, you know, the thinking that way. And though I could identify out when it came to, you know, the external behaviors, the weight gain, the health problems, I could not deny that I definitely identified with the thinking that is described in this chapter. So incredibly grateful and really appreciate all the shares. And what's really coming to me this morning is I'm pretty convinced that the food is not going to do it for me. You know, like I, I recognize food thoughts for what they are. I don't buy into them. However, what still rises up for me today is self-reliance, you know, that internal condition of no, I can manage it this time. I can do it this time. And so that's another great obsession for me is I can somehow control and enjoy life on my terms, relying on my own power. And it's not that I want to, you know, it's not that I want to not rely on God. It's just that I have a lot of rewiring and unlearning to do. You know, I've just learned to rely on self, and it's not going away overnight. I need to be patient with this process of learning to rely on God. And when I see the last line that says, or, you know, the almost last line talks about, you know, this great obsession that I'm going to control and enjoy it, is because at some point it appeared to work. I thought it worked, but really on a long-term basis, it was temporary. It was not a long-term solution. And so there's part of my brain that thinks, no, to do it. It worked that time. You know, you managed this thing well and things worked out. Have to figure out how to make that happen again. And the delusion or the illusion or both is that it ever worked. You know, just like the food, it maybe provided a sense of ease and comfort, but did it provide real ease and comfort? And it's the same with self-reliance, that it never actually worked. And my insanity is that I keep on trying to recreate what was never there in the first place. So anyway, I don't know if that makes sense, but I really appreciate taking a good look at this material. It's pretty life-changing, and I'm so grateful that I get to study it with you guys today and pick up these spiritual toolkit. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Freya. Made sense to me. Before I take Deborah G's share, I'd just like to let everyone know that might have joined us where we're at. So we are reading today, we've just started More About Alcoholism chapter, and we are on page 30, and we are unpacking the first paragraph only today. And after Deborah G, I will take another lineup. Go ahead, Deborah.
Oh, good morning, and thank you. Thank you so much for monitoring today, chairing the meeting, and thank you all who have made this meeting possible. And thank you all so much for all your shares and 12-stepping me today. And also, wow, welcome to all the newcomers that are on the line. You don't ever have to live like you're living today because of this beautiful program. You know, and I was thinking I only would hang out with people that were, I never hung out with people that were in recovery. I only hung out with people that were, eating sugar and flour. And that made it, that made it okay for me, you know, but they weren't doing all the things I was doing with sugar and with alcoholic foods that I was doing. They weren't doing that. And a lot of it was a secret, what I was doing. I wouldn't tell anybody. You know, isn't that funny? I wouldn't tell anybody because it's insane. They would know how insane I was. And so I kept it a secret so I could keep it going. And yes, I was one that would compulsively exercise and restrict. You know, that thinking, if I don't eat, then my body will eat the fat. And then I'll be okay. And then I can go back to doing. And I would do that. I would actually do, and the distorted view of my body, oh, it was just so crazy what I was doing to my poor body, now that I can see that today. And I was so disconnected from God, disconnected from other people, disconnected from myself, and doing those things. And, you know, I feel so sad about that, and that, but I would continue to do it more and more and more. I would keep doing it, and not being able to know what to do about it. And yeah, I tried programs, OA programs. I'd just go through the motions and going back the same thing again, back this. It was years and years before I finally totally surrendered. And when I did my, let go of my last alcoholic food and did my step work, and that first step of honesty, truly being honest, there could be honesty, you know, and I could talk about what was going on with me and what I was doing, you know, looking at the reality of the truth and starting to get connected with God again, starting to get connected with other people again, and getting connected with myself. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much, Deborah G. And before I take another lineup, I just want to remind everyone that we do value your experience, strength, and hope. But we do ask that, because we have such a large meeting every day on all the lines, that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday on any Vision for You meeting, please hold back today. And I am ready to take your names one at a time. Go ahead.
Darian K.
Darian K. Okay, go ahead, Darian.
Oh, good morning. Can you still hear me?
Yes, loud and
clear. Oh, good. Okay. Great. Good morning, everybody. It's Darian Kay in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. Gratefully recovered today. Oh. And lovely to be with you this morning. My day off today. So that paragraph just, for me, highlights with a really bright highlighter marker how I thought about dieting. Those vain attempts, you know, to control my eating, try to follow some kind of food plan, but not really, just kind of. and then think that I could control my food again, because diets were so temporary. Oh my gosh, they were just way too painful and uncomfortable and yucky to stick with for any length of time. I couldn't imagine, you know, doing it, you know, as a quote unquote way of life. Because it was just too painful for me. So, gaining back that control, you know, just, learning how to, you know, eat right or the right foods or whatever. And always going back to the food, rewarding myself, in fact, for, you know, sticking to something. How crazy, crazy. And then paying somebody else, right, to fund my craziness. And so it's such a relief to have this program and to know that it's not a moral issue, that it's not because I'm, you know, worse than someone else. I am just a food addict. I'm just a compulsive overeater. And, you know, the mental twists and the craving were all there, you know, just screwing up my desire to control and be like everybody else, you know, and just not have this disease, obviously. Who wants it, right? But in hindsight, I do see that because I have this disease, I have this recovery, and I have all of you, and I have just a beautiful program. I just recently celebrated 36 years in this program, and I'm just so grateful. I can't imagine my life without it. And I'll be forever grateful that I, you know, don't have the control, and that I know, you know, that my higher power and all of you and the tools and the steps keep me in this one day at a time program. So thank you so much. I pass.
Thanks, Darian, and happy OA anniversary. All right, I'll take some more names now. You haven't shared in the last 2 days. Please give me your name.
Kara L.
Lorraine W.
Kara L. Lorraine W.
Jennifer A.
Teresa P.
Jennifer A. And Teresa P. Okay, I have Kara L. Kara L., Lorraine W., Jennifer, Teresa P., and then there was one other.
Alexis F.
Thank you, Alexis. Yeah. Alexa. Okay, we're going to start with Kara L. Go ahead, Kara.
Good morning. This is Kara L., Republican Compulsive Reader from Long Beach, California. Thank you to everybody doing service on the meeting today. And when I read this in this paragraph, I love the spaces in the big book which help me identify in, which bring me in to thinking and to identify with other people, because I always think I'm unique and special and that I am suffering alone. And to really admit that I was a hopeless, compulsive overeater was hard. Because I had, in my younger years, I had had times where I could control the food, where I did have the willpower to lose the weight. Now, I always gained it back, but I always thought I could just take it right off. Until the morning I woke up and I realized I couldn't do it anymore. That I had that promise every single night that I would go to bed, I would say, tomorrow I will lose weight, I will control it, and I would wake up and I would start off with a diet breakfast, and then I would continually eat the rest of the day compulsively. Right back to the cycle again of where I would go to bed, demoralized, and make a promise. And it wasn't until I was able to admit that I was a hopeless compulsive overeater, and that even though I tried so hard to be like other people that I saw that were thin, tried to eat like them, or tried to do all the diets and things like that, that it was beyond anything that I could do on my own. And when I came to that realization and I let it settle, I realized that there had to be something greater than myself that I needed to ask for help. And I had to open that door and invite that power into my life. And I once heard it described, you know, like I'm a battery and there's only so far I can go on battery power. And then I need to plug in to something greater than me to be, have the power to do what needs to be done. And the moment that I opened that door, that's when things began to change. You know, working these steps helped me open the door. Working these steps and being as honest as I possibly knew how to be with a power greater than myself, and letting go to that power and absolutely, absolutely knowing that I could not do it on my own and that I had to have something greater than me, is where my recovery began and is where the beginning of where I am today. And I'm ever so grateful that I am a hopeless, compulsive overeater. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much, Kara L. From California, and Lorraine W. is up next.
Good morning. This is Lorraine W. from Massachusetts, and I want to thank you for running the meeting and for all those in attendance. And more about alcoholism, but for me, compulsive overeating. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating is a great obsession I had. That illusion was what I had. Each time I would say, this is the time, this is the one that'll get me, and I will be fine and be able to eat normally like everybody else. And it wasn't what could happen. I always gained back more than what I lost, always. And it was so demoralizing each time that I tried. And it got to the point where I just couldn't do it. I could no longer even try. And I said to my husband before I started in 1992, if I could just keep on this weight, and that was 300 pounds, and stop this yo-yo, I would do it. But I know
that 350, 400 was in the books for me. I knew that much because I always gained back more. The demoralizing and what I believe, that illusion that I had. And I had to come to OA to learn and to study the big book. Just as I studied every textbook in college and in school, I had to study and learn over and over again that I had this disease, and no longer could I put an illusion in my face and say, I'll be okay, I can do this. Well, I couldn't. I could no longer do this. It had to be my higher power. And where I got my higher power was through OA. I had a God in my life, but I didn't have the spirituality and the relationship with God that I learned to get through OA and for being in this program. It is such a gift. No longer do I have to be demoralized. No longer did I have to carry that illusion or be in denial about what I ate and how much I ate. And I could now be honest about my food. And my food has to be healthy for me. It has to be weighed and measured and called into my sponsor every single day in order for me to break that illusion, and I pass. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Lorene. And Jennifer A. is up next. Go ahead, Jennifer. Star one to unmute, Jennifer. I think I got the name right.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, I hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Jennifer H., compulsive overeater from North Alabama. And this really makes me think about a lot of things. And I certainly did not want to think that I was, that I was bodily and mentally different from, in fact, I thought that would be the worst thing in the world. And it was always kind of in the corner of my mind somewhere that maybe these people I hear occasionally talking about sugar and flour, maybe that could be the answer, but I would push it back in this little corner of my mind because it seemed like, how in the world could I live like that? It really didn't seem like I could do, I mean, I just couldn't imagine it, and so I didn't want to think that, and but when I look back now, I can see that I was certainly obsessed with it and that I was bodily and mentally different. You know, I remember back to holidays, even when I was a kid, like my siblings, I would look over and they'd have their basket of goodies and it would just sit there for a long time until it had to be thrown away. But mine would be gone that day or the next day. And then this last, relapse before I made it to Vision, I can remember when I would go from store to store because it was Halloween, That was the perfect cover because everybody bought tons of junk at Halloween, right? And, you know, the amount of time and space it would take up in my mind to be thinking about all that. So, denying it just kept it going on and on. And it was like insanity because it affected my functioning in every way. And I understand now that it's a block. If it was a block between me and my higher power and between me and my fellows, and I wasn't going to be able to function in life, you know, with that going on like that. The good thing now is it turns out that, you know, all I can function so much better. And also once I, admitted fully and then I did all the things and the steps and had a sponsor and everything, my higher power protects me, and I don't have to think that way or have those obsessive thoughts anymore. Something I was always afraid of was, what if people pressure me? You know, because the other people who aren't like me, what if they say, oh, you got to do this, or here, have some of this, or whatever. And there's even somebody today at my place of work who says, I never know what to get you because you don't eat, you don't drink, you don't eat, you know, you don't this or that, you know. And it doesn't go in and bother me. My higher power protects me, you know, because of this. I'm not alone. I don't have to feel like, you know, I'm bodily different from everybody else and that's pitiful, you know. No, there are a whole bunch of us. And we didn't have that many face-to-face in my area, so I'm so glad somebody came in and started talking about vision because there's so many of us. I am bodily different, but I'm not alone. And thanks very much. I'm grateful you guys for being here. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Jennifer. And I think we may only have time for Teresa P., but let's see how it goes. Go ahead, Teresa, unmute.
Hi, I'm Teresa P., recovered compulsive overeater from California, and what a great opportunity to be on a meeting and to hear the big book one more time, because you know that's my handbook to life. They got the instructions there. I finally found out how to do life. It's there. And there were so many things that I did not understand and how to do in life. I was just clueless right from the start. And you know, and the things I heard, you know, I didn't talk about things with other people. I just was kept all to myself and didn't tell anybody anything, and I didn't know there was a problem with that. I was busy trying to be good, and I had a sugar problem right from the beginning. And I did notice as a little kid, you know, it just seems like, oh, how come, you know, people can just set aside and not, you know, eat things. But I can't, you know, and my mom would tell me, well, you know, just have one. And I tried for years just to do one. You'd think I'd clue into that it never would work, but I tried it till I was 45 and darn near died of this disease and miserable. And then I heard somebody had mentioned they were going to Overeaters Anonymous, and I knew about 12 steps, and I go, they have one for food? I was so happy. I went to the meeting, and it was wonderful hearing that first of all, that compulsive overeating is a disease, and I felt so vindicated and all that shame lifted from me. But to know that, you know, I can't do one. I lived with that delusion all my life, that somehow you could do just one and it'll be okay. And I can't, but I can do none with the help of God and the program of Overeaters Anonymous. And I've been doing none for over 25 years with the sugar and you know, and it's just, it's great. And I am so glad that I looked at the shining faces that I saw there, and, you know, and people were happy. And I wanted the freedom from all the pain I was suffering, and the mental, physical, and spiritual and emotional pain. And I got it. I got it. And, you know, I didn't do it perfectly. And IQ is a work in progress. But, you know, I did give up. The first thing I gave up was my first sponsor said, no chocolate, no sugar. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I know they're a problem, but how do you live without them? Well, I find to do that by, you know, working the steps. And God does for me what I can't do for myself because I can't do it. And God lifted that obsession. And I lost that about 100 pounds, you know, in the first little over a year. And I'm very grateful for that, and things that I found out there's other things that I can't eat.
And that's time. Thank you. I think I'm being heard. Okay.
Carrie, are you there? Yes.
Yes. Can you hear me now? Sorry about that.
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. And that's all the time. And I'm so sorry, Alexa F., we're not going to have time to hear you today. Please call in tomorrow to share. And we will now close with the reading from the big book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Jody E., please read A Vision for You?
Yes, I will. Thank you so much, Sherry. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.